menina. Thank you very much. Are you all seated, ladies and gentlemen? Thank you very much. You are heartily welcome, Commandant Brigadier General Lekelo. We are going to introduce our team, members of parliament and members of this portfolio committee. We have already introduced ourselves to the department, the delegation that is sitting on my left before you came in is from the Department of Defense and Military Veterans. And then on my right, the first row, we have members who are members of this portfolio committee. My name is Malusi Sten Mutimele. I'm the chairperson of this committee. Whip.
I'm Nyamele Boy, member of parliament.
I'm Tumsan Kamete, member of this committee.
I'm Luka Misi, a member of the committee.
I'm Advocate Thomas Bongo, a member of this committee from the African National Congress.
That's sabotage by my Ngongo, a member of this committee.
My name is David Manuel. I'm a member of this committee, which is the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans.
Shahid Issa, member of this committee.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngango. You don't suspect anybody of sabotaging you?
I do.
I won't ask you.
It is on my left.
Thank you very much. The Commandant, I'm not sure because you... The weeks they were saying that you do not have a delegation, you have the whole college. Yeah. Now, I'm not sure how you would like to introduce yourself. You can come to the podium here.
Thank you, sir, and honorable members of parliament.
And as you introduce yourself, you may briefly just tell us the expectation. What are your expectations from this committee?
Okay, thank you. I will just make a brief pre-introduction of the group. We cannot name each by name because it's quite a large group. I am Brigadier General Gordon Yegel, the Commandant of the Defense College. It's a group of learners from the National Defense College in Pretoria. The group is composed mainly of members of the Department of Defense. However, we have two brigadiers from the South African Police Services. We've got a deputy commissioner from Correctional Services. We've got a member from AMSCO and a member from CSIR. In addition to that, we have international fellows from Fraternal Defense Forces from Kenya, Lesotho, Namibia, Nigeria, and Zimbabwe. That is briefly the composition of the groups, but you will have noted that we're quite big because we also have their spouses on this particular tour, national study tour to the Western Cape. The national study tour is part of the program. We call it experiential learning. Our program is pitched at the national security strategic level, where we introduce members from various departments and even from the other armed forces to have an understanding of national security theory and national security strategy. What is it that keeps nations strong, that makes them strong, that and how do you consolidate national power? That's briefly what I will indicate about this. The national study tour then, its purpose is for members to meet various stakeholders, be it business, be it government, departments, and understand what is the focus of those particular departments. The last visit we had here, we visited the metro. Today, we are visiting the parliament and specifically the portfolio committee. And I was pleased when I saw some of the senior members of the Department of Defense last night, and I didn't expect we could have this opportunity to be briefed by the committee about its role and how it executes its oversight role over the Department of Defense, which is one area that can help members understand the interaction in terms of civil-military relations and so on. Briefly, Honorable Chair, is how we can explain our visit. My view is that it's up to you, sir, then to decide whether you could just brief us and or we could sit in and listen to the proceedings, and which could be quite revealing maybe to most of us who may not have been in these this type of environment. But I'll leave that to you in your capable hands, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, General. We are going to open up by saying to you that this portfolio committee, we call it a portfolio committee of defense and military veterans, because we are a constitutional democracy, this committee comprised of members of different parties. We have the African National Congress, we have the DA, we have NFP, we have EFF, and those are the parties that I... IFP.
That's the subject of our session.
Now, you must understand we are multi-party. That is the kind of fight we have here. Now, so this is supposed to strengthen and deepen our democracy. And it's also, we're also charged with oversight. Now, as a chairperson, but also a member of the African National Congress, my purpose here is because of the character and the nature of the portfolio of the Department of Defense and Military Veterans, I should always push for a common purpose. That is because of the nature of the Department of Defense and Military Veterans. because the department is one department that benefits all the people of South Africa. As you could say, you can pick up in their constitutional mandate, the constitutional mandate that it should protect the citizens, must defend the country. It means that this department is a very crucial department that also needs to be supported. We do not resort to grandstanding when we deal with matters of this department. Now, what we do, the department will normally present its annual performance plan. We should be in line with the legislation, because we are parliament, we are working with rules and legislation. And then we will oversight that as to whether it talks to the legislation, it talks to the priorities of government, and then also oversight as to the correct implementation and the correct budgeting of those programs. We have our own sites as a portfolio committee, because we are from different parties. As we have seen, the first fight has started with myself and Honorable Mwango there. Those are the kinds of fights that we have, but we always have a common issue as to how we would like this country to be defended, to be secured, the people or the citizens of this country to be defended and to be secured. I'm going to, basically, that is what we do. We also do study tours, like you do, to benchmark on a variety of matters. Could it be legislation? Could it be operational? And so on. Now, I'm going to ask the honorable members to add wherever they want to add in what this portfolio committee does. Honorable members? Honorable Mayor?
Chair, I just need some guidance. Would you like me to make some general comments, and how controversial would you like them to be?
You can be as controversial as you like. You must also tell them that you are from DA.
Chair, I'll in fact try to be uncontroversial, but to put some views on the table. The Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans obviously is a committee comprising of members of the National Assembly, and conventionally deals with legislation and then oversight, particularly of annual reports and quarterly reports. The committee is distinct from the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, which is a committee comprising of members of the National Assembly and members of the National Council of Provinces, and conventionally deals with particularly the operational side of the Defence Force. Now, one of the, and let me try to put this as uncontroversially as possible, one of the challenges for the fifth democratic parliament is to, in line with our constitutional duty, to exercise effective scrutiny and oversight, particularly of the Department of Defense. And one of the constraints that was certainly frustrating in the last parliament, and I hope will not be of equal frustration in the fifth democratic parliament, is the level of transparency in the Department of Defense. This is going to be, I think, a central debate when we deal with the chapter on oversight in the Defense Review. And the root causes of I've said this publicly many times, my concern is that the Department of Defense
is increasingly becoming what I refer to as a state within a state, and is resistant to effective scrutiny and oversight by Parliament. Now, there could be several reasons for that, but I think that the root cause of the difficulty is that the legislative branch and the executive branch, in this case, the Portfolio Committee and the Department of Defense, have never reached agreement on the principles that ought to apply in a democracy governing what kind of information should be disclosed and what kind of information should not be disclosed. That, I think, is a debate that we are going to have in the when we deal with the Defense Review. Because one of my big concerns in the Defense Review is that if the policy is adopted and implemented as it is proposed, it will mean that oversight of the Defense Force is effectively terminated. Because it proposes establishing a new committee that would be established in terms of legislation and new rules of Parliament, and that committee will meet, like the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, behind closed doors. Now, there might be a view that that is a very good thing, but if you look at the example on which that proposal is based, it's based on the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. And that committee has its own constraints. And one of the problems with the Joint Standing Committee, because it meets exclusively in camera, and because possibly it also fails to produce reports to Parliament as a whole, it leads to, I think, greater public distrust of the state security services. So it's a dilemma. But ultimately, I think we need a debate about what the guidelines are and where we draw the line between what information is disclosed and what information is not disclosed to Parliament. And I certainly look forward to having that debate with my colleagues in Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Meneer. As you can hear, there is a very big debate coming. And then I just wish you would be here to witness that debate. Thank you, Honourable Meneer. Any other member wants to add? Mwango, you've been complaining about support charge.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Well, there isn't much that one would like to add on to what the Honourable Member, Mr. Meneer, has actually said. Obviously, this is a platform where we actually debate a lot of issues because we are guided by one common objective to see the Defence Force actually being true to its constitutional mandate, that of defending the territorial the territory of this country and its citizens. And we are also very very hard on actually monitoring the budget itself, how the budget is actually being managed, because we do so on behalf of the taxpayers of this country. And we are actually from time to time asking the department to actually come and report, and if there are things that we are not happy about, we try to actually raise those issues with the leadership of the military or the defense as a whole. So it's quite a challenging task to be here, and you can imagine sometimes crossing swords with the generals when you are also going to be seen loitering around in the streets alone as you sometimes you look over your shoulders whether but that's a joke. But we actually are, we have a very good working relationship with all the arms of the defense, the ministry, if we have anything that we want the minister to come here and explain to us, so far we do not have any problem in actually getting the minister to come here. The leadership of the military are actually very good people. We are so far having a very cordial relationship, working relationship with them. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ngwango. Honorable Witt.
Thanks, Chair. For me, firstly, it's just to thank the dedication from the college to have an interest in our parliament and in our democracy. And to me, it shows some patriotism, that they would really want to be as patriotic as possible and understand everything that happens in our country, be it in municipalities, be it in government, as they have mentioned. So we thank them very much. And also, just for them to be in this department, to be members of this department or students in that college, it's actually a calling that you offer yourself to the country. You will defend the country, you will defend its constitution, you will defend its people. So we appreciate that. And we hope that you stay here, you will learn something. And I would propose, Chair, that they actually stay for the presentation, and if they so wish, so that they see what happens in committee meetings, so that next time they're also part of the department, they know what to do. Thanks.
Thank you. That is the whip of the committee. Honorable Kameda, they have time constraints. I understand they should be leaving by 5 to 11. Isn't it, Brigadier General, 5 to 11? Then I also wish they could stay and listen to the interaction. You can stay. Oh, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. And then, okay, General. As I told you, that we have the department here. We are going to do our normal task as mandated by the Constitution. Honorable Minister.
Chair, I wonder if you consider giving members of the National Defence College an opportunity to ask questions if they
We'll come to that, Honourable Menia. Thank you very much. So I was still saying that we have the department here. You might have seen in the media. Normally in the media they are saying that the department is being grilled by somebody. We do not grill the departments here. We have got our own terminology. We do not use a sensational terminology when we deal with the department. We oversize the department so that it must be as effective and as efficient as it could be, as the honorable members already indicated. So there is no grilling, because we also know what we are supposed to oversight. I'm sure grilling is about people who do not know what to oversight. That's why they sensationalize it. I'm going to take it over to you, General, if there are any comments or questions before I give the department to make its own presentation. Thank you very much. We record here, you can see. You can see that.
Perhaps because we may have to withdraw the chair whilst the proceeding is on, I'm sure we will have an hour here sitting and listening. I would therefore maybe request, if I'm not wasting your time, should any of the program members have questions, you give them now 10 minutes question time. and they can then ask questions to the honorable members, and then from then on you can, I would then request immediately after the question time that we have just a short ceremony where the members of the program hand you a gift to you, to the committee, to you, and then we can sit and listen. And then at the time when we have to leave, we can just quietly withdraw if you agree with that.
That's fine. Thank you, General.
Okay.
Are there any questions or comments for 10 minutes? We use my watch. My watch says 10:43. 10 minutes. Sir?
Good morning. I'm Dr. Sono from the CSR. During the briefing on what the portfolio does, it was mentioned that you do put scrutiny on the doing of the DoD. Now, my question is that what are the outcome of that scrutiny? What do you do with it, and what are the expected outcome from the action that must be taken after that?
Thank you very much. Any other questions?
Thank you, General Chair. My name is Tonum Zintakana, Deputy Commissioner from Correctional Services. Given the widened approach to national security, even included in the defense review, is the broadened approach to human security more than defense security, how is this Parliament and Portfolio Committee influencing other committees to take that their responsibility towards national security and factor it into their programs? For example, we are doing lots of research as this group. I'm working on land reform and national security. Now, obviously, there's a very broad approach. And I just want to understand what is the responsibility of this committee in ensuring that other departments that have an equal contribution towards national and human security actually understand that role and ensure that it does not lead to just compartmentalization and militarization of security as it was in the past. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other?
Mr. Ngoma from the DoD Finance. Given the fact that the economic growth is declining, and I understand it's around about 2.6% of the GDP. And given the fact that the Defense Force is also operating regionally in terms of peacekeeping operations, and the fact that the budget of the defense is also declining, what is the Portfolio Committee's view in terms of the role that the Defense Force should be playing continentally and even internationally, and in terms of the budget allocations? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other? Sir, General.
Yeah, I'm Brigadier General Shizzi. Mine is quick. Because of this program, we are dealing with the national security. We have seen that we have written good policies, trying to actually to focus the defense force to be effective and efficient in its actually endeavor to undertake its national mandate. My question is, as this committee, what are you doing to assist the DoD and military veterans to implement this two particular actually landmark document, which is the defense review, as well as the national what to call development plan? Because we have seen from the discussion and from our research that this is not but a one department plan to be able to implement this, but it requires the whole of government approach to implement that. My colleague has alluded also to the budget, shrinking of the budget. We have seen and we have understand what Defense Review proposes, that if at least for the next 10 years the DoD can have 2% of the GDP, then they'll be able to undertake the mandate. Is this committee also playing a role, critical role, to be able to assist the defense in undertaking that? To that day, they tried to get somewhere a piece of this land to have that 2% so that we'll be able to be in a sound footing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other? We are done. But I allocate to the members. We start with the first question, Honorable Menier.
Chair, I'd like to actually, deal with the issue of national security and then the defense review and budget. I wonder if you would mind allocating the outcome to another member. I'm in your hands. I could cede it to my colleague.
Honorable Issaf.
Thank you very much. I think the first question that is posed is what happens after oversight is being done by the Portfolio Committee. In terms of the legislation, Parliament is the supreme body that implements the Constitution and also writes the laws for this country. So Parliament is that body that determines what regulates this country. And the committees are an extension of Parliament, which means while we are sitting here, this committee, the chair takes the position of the speaker that would be in the House. The committee secretary will take the role of the secretary of Parliament, which is, of course, the table, that will give guidance to the rules of the House, the rules of the committee. So it's an extension and must be respected like the House must be respected with the same dignity and decorum. So what happens of Parliament? Parliament's committees then, of course, deliberates, and they've been given the powers. Besides legislating, the oversight means they can actually do site visits, physical visits to go see what happens at any military base in terms of what we are doing. The second one is that we can ask the various organs that are subject to scrutiny by us to report to us, to brief us, and we can, in the case of irregularities, we can even summons anybody to come to this committee. So this committee then can demand witnesses, they can have hearings, they can have full proceedings, although it is not a court, but it has the right to investigate, and then based upon that, to make recommendations. It will not make the final decision. Decisions are ratified in Parliament, which then becomes the decisions of the House, the most supreme House in the country. And based on that, of course, those recommendations become then resolutions of the House that will then be directed to the particular department to implement and to respond. And then there will be a whole evaluation and monitoring process of how this is implemented or not implemented. So I think those are the consequences of the PCDMV, which is our portfolio committee, and any other portfolio committee in respect of their responsibilities, powers, and functions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Issaf. I'm going to ask the committee whip, in terms of influence of other departments, just to give an outline on the cluster. Honorable Whip.
Thanks, sir. I'm sure all of us know that one speaker said, because I think it comes from correctional services, that even us in Parliament, we've got a cluster, as you might know, which means defense, subs, correctional service, and justice, home affairs, and all that. So as a cluster, firstly, I think we are all as committees bound by the Constitution. So we pay allegiance to the Constitution. So that brings us to the center as all committees, whether in this cluster or any other clusters. Secondly, we have these clusters where then we discuss issues of common interest as a cluster. And then we table things, and which makes things work far better for Parliament, because we are a cluster, we avoid duplication, so that if this department is doing that, the other one is still doing the same. From there, we draw up a program that would be common, that would be adopted by Parliament, and then move on with that. So there is interaction with the related departments on what to be done and with all other matters that refer to the cluster. However, it doesn't stop each department because they've got different functions for it on its own to take things forward. So that is how we function, that there's no, we don't work in silos as a cluster, but departments do have a right to move with their own programs.
Thank you very much. When we refer to matters of common interest, we refer to security matters for all those departments. Honorable, who wants to do take the economic growth slide? Honorable Bongo?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And thanks for the students, Chef, from the college. The students. Okay, thanks to students from the college.
Which is for students.
We really appreciate that they come here. I think it's one of the important things that we may have to, maybe they must give us an opportunity now, Chair. Maybe we must do the exam paper and mark it us, specifically around the subject that they've raised. I think we will appreciate the road that we've ran since 1994, post-1994 and pre-1994. And the center of everything, it was the issue of the economic growth. At the center of economic growth was the evolution that had to take place going forward. But as a portfolio committee, not only as a portfolio committee, we in the ruling party, we have taken a posture that we need to get into the defense sector. We need to break the defense sector so that it's able to assist the growth, particularly of the previously disadvantaged people, the small, medium, what they call them as MMEs, so that they can penetrate into the that sector of economy. So the small business people must be able to venture into being able to go and procure this big machines that is in defense. And other than that, it was the matter, the other issue raised was the support that we need to give regionally and so on and so forth, vis-a-vis the this issue of growth and so on. So I think that as the country, we're trying as far as possible within those limited resources, but it's a challenge that we're trying to grapple with, both the executive arm and the legislative arm, and to make sure that at the end we're able to achieve what we have set for ourselves, because the stability in the region is solely dependent on ourselves, South Africa. So we've got to do everything in our power to make sure that we play within the limited resources and break even. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. You, Honorable Menia, you've got a passion for defense review. But I must also tell you, we haven't as yet dealt with that strategic document as a portfolio committee. We are still going to
deal with it, but it's already in the public domain. There's nothing that stops us from talking about it. Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to deal with two, I think, very important questions. The one is the question of the national security, which is fundamental to this program, and the other is the defense review and the question relating to the budget. Let me start with the whole question of national security. I would put it to the Defense College that we need to rethink the broad approach to national security for two reasons. The first is that a broad approach to national security is deeply, deeply authoritarian and in conflict with the Constitution, in my view. And why do I say that? I say that because if you adopt a broad definition of national security, you by definition expand the scope of influence of the national security or the security services, the defense, police, and the state security services. That is the first reason. And I would submit that the member of the class from correctional services shouldn't actually be part of this class. Correctional service is not a national security matter. It is a law enforcement and criminal justice matter. And land reform is not a national security issue. Land reform is an important issue, but land reform is about land reform. So the broad concept has significant consequences, democratic consequences, and consequences for the quality of our democracy. These are deeply, deeply authoritarian and dangerous concepts. That's the first reason. The second reason is it is highly inefficient, because a broad concept of national security means that the state security services start to take an interest in matters like land reform or in economic development, and eventually are put under pressure by political authorities to start to implement programs which are actually not in its technical sphere of competence. We cannot, for example, hold the military responsible for the state of the economy or for the state of local government in South Africa. The state of local government is a local government problem. So it's a highly inefficient concept. And it's actually precisely for that reason that Parliament spent 3 years, literally, debating the concept of national security during the deliberations on the so-called Secrecy Bill, the Protection of State Information Bill. And as a result of that debate, the concept of national security has now actually been codified in law, in the General Intelligence Laws Amendments Act, which was passed by Parliament last year. And that concept, I think, is fundamental for two reasons. It's formulated in the concept, in my view, is still too broad, but it is certainly not as broad as it was when deliberations began. But most importantly, that clause is framed using a model of a Canadian legislating to say not only what national security is, but more importantly, what national security is not. And the qualifying clause is very important. It says national security does not include lawful political action, protest, activism, and dissent. And so it tells our security services what national security is and what national security more specifically is not. It is a deeply, deeply dangerous concept, and it's precisely for that reason I say, with respect, that the Minister of Defense recently got into deep trouble when she called a press conference to explain how the national security cluster were going to deal with unruly members of Parliament. it is not the national security national security structure's responsibility to deal with members of parliament. It is the speaker's responsibility to deal with unruly members of parliament. So I would hope that during your debates about the concepts of national security and its consequences in a developing democracy, you will take my remarks and possibly consider them, and certainly have a look at the definition of national security, which is now law in the General Intelligence Laws Amendment Act. That's the first thing. The second thing, that's the first issue. The second, very importantly, is the defense review. The chair has correctly informed you that the defense review document has now been tabled in Parliament, and that document must now be considered by a Parliament and will probably be dealt with by the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. Now, the problem the challenge which we have is that the defense review is in fact not a defense review. The defense review is a defense policy. And the problem with the defense review is it is a policy which is not costed. If you look at the defense review, there's 400 stakeholder meetings, 428 stakeholder meetings, not one with the National Treasury. So that document has not been costed. And the fundamental iron law of public policy making, which is that you cannot do what you cannot fund, doesn't seem to have been taken into account. That's the general law. And then the country-specific law, the iron law of public policy making in South Africa, is the National Treasury decides. That also doesn't seem to have been taken into account. So Parliament are going to be sitting with a defense review that is not a defense review, that has not been costed and does not contain a force design. Because ultimately a defense review is a negotiation, a complex negotiation between what the Department of Defense wants and what the Department of Defense can have. And those hard decisions have not materialized in the defense review. They are still going to have to take place. And the penny does not seem to have dropped. And it is my view, given the state of the economy and my reading of the tea leaves, that the appropriation for defense will never in the foreseeable future be increased to 2% of the GDP. It is not going to happen, people. It is just simply not going to happen. So the Department of Defense is going to have to adopt another approach. And that means scaling back the level of ambition in the first instance. And in the second instance, radically restructuring the Department of Defense and, in fact, implementing the 1998 Defense Review. That is the root cause of the problem. But the takeaway from my view, I think, is that the Defense Review, in my view, is dead in the water because of a flawed process.
That is my view. Yeah, I want you to round up.
Thank you.
Any other addition, honourable members? Honourable Nisi?
Thank you very much, Chair. My colleague has said a mouthful, but as the only woman in this committee, after we had our own Women's Month, August, I think I should lift that flag high. I would like to thank the college for coming to this parliament today. We really appreciate Chair and welcome them all. As my colleague has already alluded that we are the extension of the National Assembly and the NCOP we are this unity in diversity, but we are having one common goal of seeing our country moving forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Whip.
Thanks, Chair. It's just, I'm sure there are lecturers and students that are visiting. Now they've had a taste of what happens in committee meetings, which is good. But with due respect, one issue that I want to stress is the involvement of the department or of the country in the region and in Africa. There we are duty-bound in terms of our foreign policy. Let me give you an example. I was in one meeting with somebody who had gone to a university where there was a strike. And this somebody said, but why are you striking? Then the students answered and said, yeah, they're raising registration fees from 1,005 to 3,000 rand. And this person said, you know, that 3,000 rand is nothing compared to lack of knowledge that you'll have and the illiteracy that you'll have. The ignorance that you're going to have without being at school just because of that 3,000 rand is more. What I'm trying to say is, if we don't attend to our neighbors into our region and into Africa, the issues will come home to bite us. So our involvement is actually informed by our foreign policy. Also, the issue of land reform, we know what's happened with regards. If you were born and bred in South Africa, land is an issue of national security. You know, anything can happen. You know, we can look at Zimbabwe here, anything. It's only that we do have a responsible government here. So I'm sure one issue that is also a national security matter is land. If there's a member, lastly, Chair, who's not aware that unruly members and chaotic members might lead to issues of national security, then it's unfortunate, you see, because that's the basis on which we would come to conclusion, because it's a small thing. I want to end there. I don't want to go deep on this issue. Thanks.
Very much.
Honorable Mwangwa. Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I actually wanted also to touch base with the issue of our role in the African continent and indeed in other, you know, international multilateral responsibilities. The question was actually was that what role should the department be playing continentally in view of our budgetary constraints. I just want to add my voice on what the whip has said, that it's unfortunate that we have budgetary constraints, but as South Africa, we have that responsibility through this African Union to actually play this kind of role that we are playing, because we are committed to seeing one stability in the continent, stability that should actually lead to strong governance. You know, Africa is bedeviled with you know, this problem of weak governance, and which actually is a problem when you talk about economic growth in this continent, because all these three things are interrelated. You can't have economic growth in the midst of instability. You can't have strong governance if there is no stability. So that is why then we are finding ourselves, you know, in certain parts of Africa, because we want to help in achieving this kind of regional and continental stability. Of course, there will always be budgetary constraints, and it's a question of robbing Peter in order to pay Paul in this instance, because of our foreign policy, you know, objective. I just wanted to actually add on that.
Thank you, Honorable Members, Honorable Nisi, before we wrap up.
Thank you very much, sir. Chair, I must apologize for coming late. My security, financial security was threatened by SARS. I had to jump in their office quickly. So that's why I had to be late. I apologize. I'm not sure whether I understood properly the man behind what was asking about our contribution in the NDP as the committee. If that was the question, then I wanted to say to the member, we also as a committee sat down and discussed and looked exactly how are we going to make sure that the department contributes in the NDP, particularly on the three issues, poverty, unemployment, and what's the third one? Inequality. So we are looking at that so that we make sure that the department does contribute directly in the NDP to ensure that these issues that are raised in the NDP, the department finds itself addressing them. So as a committee, ours is to make sure that that is not in the department's program, annual performance plans, those must be reflected, and ours will be to oversight how do they do that. That's what I wanted to contribute to. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Nisi. You want the last shot, Honorable Ongo?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Because we're mainly dealing with students, so we've got to put certain things into proper context, because we're also in authority. When we write exam, we can quote some of the things that we say. Honorable Menier raised this issue about the Minister of Defense did something which was wrong by intervening when they were unruly members of parliament. So I don't think that is true. There is a misunderstanding of these sectors of parliament, because the state has three arms: the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. So that was whatever was made by the constitution, that is derived from the constitution. So these three arms are independent, Chair, but are very dependent on one another. The reason why they are independent is because of the checks and balance. It's not necessarily that when the other one is farther and the other one is farther, they're independent but very dependent on one another. The independence is only on the checks and balance, so that we're able as parliament can see where to draw the line, what to do where. So it shouldn't be that when the executive does certain things and you think that parliament cannot do this and this, we are just one state that is dependent on one another. That is why the executive is elected from members of parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Members, thank you very much. The delegation would like to move. And in wrapping, I want to say to you that you must not leave here with the impression that this committee says the defense review is not a defense review. The defense review is tabled as a defense review now, and unless it can be proven otherwise when this committee debates. Now, the question of clusters, national security is a very complex matter. You cannot deal with it in silos. That's why the art life class, you have home affairs, you have this and this. That is the reason why there are these clusters. As to the matter of our contribution to the economy, I always quote the what people call for China, the China dream, that the Chinese will say strong economy, strong military. I think in order for us to implement the National Development Plan, we must implement it in an environment of peace and security. That's why we, in our debate, we also encourage the peacekeeping function of our defense force, so that there should be peace and security in the region, so that we can implement our economic imperatives. That is the reason that we do that. We follow that. As for the budget, now that we have got a defense review, and now that the president, in his State of the Nation address, recognized that now that we've got a defense review, the defense review should be resourced. That touches on the budget. And of course, because our defense review is mandate-driven, this committee is going to push that those mandates should be resourced. There is no way, because we are bound by the Constitution, to do that. General, your last word.
Thank you, Chair. I'll then ask the Chair that Deputy Commissioner Ntakana can approach you just to give a gift to the committee. And if you still allow us, you can then sit in at 12 o'clock. We can sneak out if that is allowed by the committee, for just the members to have a feel of what defense will be the defense presentation, and then we can leave at 12, Chair.
Thank you very much. We would very much appreciate that, as long as you have time. It won't disturb our program. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, members of Parliament, to the generals and the leadership of the Department of Defense and program members, we are the last program of the ENSP in its current form. As of next year, there is going to be a new year-long program. But on behalf of the Commandant and on behalf of our directing staff, as well as the program members, we'd like to present to you this token of our appreciation, which is our plaque, which has many symbols, which I do not have time to explain, but there's a document in here that details what these symbols are. Safe to say that it is a plaque that says that Africa is at the center of our security paradigm, that we also have stars that represent each of the countries that are represented here, as well as the laurels representing success and victory, which is what we hope we will achieve at the end of this program. And we therefore want to take this opportunity to thank you and present this to you and to the committee in appreciation of your hospitality and engagement. It has been insightful. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Who's going to declare?
I'm worried, Chair, because I think it's like it's only given to you, so it may have to be yourself who declares.
But it belongs to the committee. Thank you very much. Let's move on to our next item on the agenda, which is the Department of Defense introduction and briefing. You have 15 minutes.
Yes, we can do it. We'll try.
Yeah.
Our presentation was planned for 30 minutes. We are going to focus on the achievements for the quarter, Chair, and challenges, as well as how we are mitigating those challenges. Mr. Dadla will make a presentation, and he does have the ability to be fast and to move quicker. Mr. Dadla.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I would therefore, as director, proceed to the presentation. And obviously, the issue of time is an issue that I'm going to take into account in the presentation. But as indicated by the Acting Secretary for Defense, I will therefore make a presentation on the overview of the Defense Administration Program, as well as reflect on some of the successes that the Defense Department has achieved in the period under review, which in this instance is the first quarter of the financial year 2014-15. Chair, before I basically do that, therefore, I would start by just making this introduction that, as you know, that Defence Administration is basically one part of the Department of Defence programs that is responsible for the overall administration of the department, and it does so therefore by developing the relevant policies and processes. It is a program through which therefore the accounting officer therefore delivers or discharges his responsibilities as contemplated in the relevant legislation. The Defence Department, as you would know, therefore derived its mandate from various pieces of legislation, which are legislation therefore were passed by this Parliament, and these range therefore from the Constitution to the Defence Act, right up to the Public Finance Management Act, as well as the Chairperson, the Military Ombud Act, Armed Corps Act, just to mention but a few. And this, therefore, constitute the basis of the Department of Defense mandate. For the execution of the defense mandate to be realized, Chairperson, therefore, we are putting on the board the organogram of the department, which, in summary, therefore, reflects the two legs of the department. Basically, one leg of that being the defense secretary and the other one being the SANDF. And obviously, they carry and execute specific mandates as they are reflected on the organogram. I think in the previous engagements we had with our Parliament, we had touched on the finer details of this organogram. I will not therefore spend time on that. However, just to reflect here that Defence Department has got a whole set of programs. There's about 8 programs that we run as Defence Department, and one is administration, which is therefore the subject of this particular engagement. But there are other ones, which include, amongst others, the fourth employment, which is basically the platform through which the defense mandate is expressed. That is where the commitment of forces happens, and that is where actually the commitment of our mandate actually happens. There's land work defense, which is basically the army program, the air defense, which is the air force, the maritime defense, which is largely the South African Navy, the military health services, which is basically SAMS, which is looks after the medical health of members of the department. There is defense intelligence program, and the last one is general support. And we have within our delegation, therefore, the chief of logistics, who manages to a large extent this general support support program. But, Chair, therefore, our directive or prescript from this parliament was to basically speak about the defense administration. And in doing so, therefore, I reflect on the board the sub-programs within the defense administration. There are sub-programs within that, and one of which, therefore, is departmental direction. That is largely the accounting officer's office. That is where his administration comes. And the second one of which is a policy and planning sub-program with two legs, basically, that in the defense secretariat as well as in the SANDF. Chair, all right, we are back on. If I just to continue with that, I was just reflecting on the various sub-programs of administration. I've spoken about the policy and planning, which therefore has got two legs, as indicated on the board. There is also a financial services sub-program, which is headed by the CFO, who is part of our delegation here. There is also a human resource support services sub-program, which is headed by CHR. There's legal services, obviously, by the chief of defense legal, who handles that. Another sub-program within the administration program, you have inspection services, and there are two legs within that. One is the IG, which is the Inspector General, and the other part, therefore, is headed by the internal support or internal audit division, and we've got the head of that particular division here. Lastly, on matters of oversight, these particular sub-programs are very critical. The other one is acquisition services, communication services, as well as the office of the chief of the SANDF as part of the sub-program within administration. religious services, defense reserves direction. We've got foreign relations and defense international affairs, as well as military veterans as a sub-program of administration. And I think we shall explain that later, what it means in this particular context. Chair, I have already indicated the overall responsibility of administration, that of overall administration of the department. And the budget allocated to defense administration program is about 11.3% of the total defense budget. By the way, the defense budget is 42 billion rand. And within that, therefore, 11% is allocated towards the defense administration program, which is about 4.6 billion rand. We shall reflect that later. And these are the sub programs, as I've already indicated, with their respective budget allocations. And you can see, therefore, that the total percentage of these sub programs amounts to 11.33%. And obviously, with a total budget in real terms of 4.6 billion rand out of the 42, which is the total DOD budget. Chair, therefore, there are certain public entities that are reporting to Defense Department. The Minister of Defense has the relevant executive authority, has got oversight over certain public entities, firstly, as well as the organs of state. And those are public entities, therefore, reporting to the Minister of Defense are the ones on the board, and the first one is AMSCO, as well as the Currency Control Board. These two entities have, on various occasions, therefore, appeared before this particular committee, and we're just reflecting them over here as structures oversighted by the Minister of Defense. And secondly, there are organs of state that Defense Department Ministry has got oversight responsibility over, and they are listed on the board here. One is military veterans. Second one is the Defense Force Service Commission, as you would know. The Office of the Military Ombud, as well as the Reserve Force Council. These are, therefore, the organs of state that bear an accountability responsibility towards the Minister of Defense as the oversight executive authority, as provided for in law. Chair, therefore, this is the area where basically we may probably spend some few minutes, because these are the achievements that we think are very important for Parliament to realize, because these have been realized within difficult times that we find ourselves in, but we have managed, irrespective, to therefore achieve these particular milestones. And they are reflective of the entire department, not only Defense Administration, but of the entire programs that we run, the 8 programs that we run. But in the area of governance, which is very key in this particular instance, we are talking about, firstly, the enhancement of civil control and oversight over the department. And I think for that to be realized, for that concept to be properly applied, there are certain things that have happened. And the first one is basically that there has been an establishment in the department successfully of a framework for the implementation of national imperatives. And those include, amongst others, the MTSF, the NDP, as earlier indicated by members of parliament here, as well as the new growth path, the IPEF, and others. But you will therefore know that the MTSF is translated into certain outcomes, and the outcomes that we contribute towards largely are the ones you said there, outcome number 3, 5, 11, and 12.
What is the MTSF?
Okay. The MTSF is a medium-term strategic framework, which basically arises out of a political mandate that the ruling party has arising out of general elections. So that therefore becomes the MTSF, and is translated into outcomes, which basically speaks to that which Department of Defense and other departments needs to do to ensure that the administration expresses the mandate of the government in office. So, but these are therefore the various, if I may, because you've asked this question, within outcome three largely talks about South Africans feeling safe, and to that end, therefore, the whole debate around security cluster, around justice system, around border safeguarding falls under that. So all the other entities, therefore, including Defense Department, who are part of the justice cluster system, will therefore find their way through that outcome number 3. Outcome number 5 is about the skilled workforce. Outcome number 11 is about defense diplomacy in our instance, but it's about foreign relations, largely. Outcome number 12 is about public administration, which therefore says all government departments, including defense, must ensure that they uphold the most prudent of public service standards and principles, and that is required in terms of that particular outcome. But that, therefore, in the department we have, and we're doing so, therefore, through this framework I just spoken about. And secondly, other matters raised by members of parliament were about the issue of compliance with legislation. And I think that is a matter that is close to our hearts. And to that end, therefore, there's quite a number of structures put into place to ensure that that particular compliance does happen. And the other one, therefore, is defense diplomacy. We understand in the Defense Department that defense diplomacy is the first layer of defense. And if it is that first layer of defense, therefore, its consolidation becomes very key. And to that end, therefore, we are engaging with quite a number of our partners and allies in the continent, as well as beyond the continent, to ensure that we get into agreements on matters of common interest, so that we pronounce as consolidation of defense diplomacy. And the other achievement that we think we have realized is about the clean audit chairperson. We shall be coming here to present the annual report in the next few months. But what we can say before that report is basically tabled is that with respect to movable assets and with movable and immovable assets, we have achieved an unqualified audit, which was not the case in the past number of years. And at this point in time, we can proudly talk about an asset register of Defense Department portfolio, talk about how those have been evaluated, how those are accounted for. And as a consequence of such an intervention, therefore, we have achieved that. And I think the AG, through his report, has therefore made that particular determination. But that is an achievement to ourselves. And the other one in the area of governance, Chair, has been the providing of a strategic direction to the department, which is basically guided by as well as aligned to national imperatives, because we accept, Chair, that we are not operating in a vacuum. We operate in a space where there are imperatives of government which we've got to implement in the department. And to that end, therefore, the defense review, as an example, is one of those. It seeks to align ourselves with the rest of government. And the last point here, under governance, is about improving on our defense accountability controls. And to that end, therefore, the reports that we provide to Parliament, may it be quarterly report, may it be either financial reports that we provide, actually speak to that particular commitment to accountability. And, Chair, therefore, we're saying these are the highlights that we have in the administration program across the department, firstly, and secondly, they are very key, therefore, in ensuring that the department does comply with its mandate. But in the area of the SANDF, therefore, which is another part of the department, we wish to highlight these achievements. Chair, the first one is about, who would know that the Defense Department has participated consistently in quite a number of national events, and one of them in this year has been the national elections that happened in May, if my memory serves me well, as well as a subsequent inauguration of the Commander-in-Chief, who is the President. And I think the role of the SANDF in those particular events, I think, is self-explanatory, and I think all of us who can testify to that, and we're noting that as an achievement. And secondly, the issue of border safeguarding is very key to ourselves. I think the security of our borders is very critical. And to that end, therefore, the rollout of that plan of border safeguarding is happening. And it has therefore brought about certain positives. And one of those is actually to curb the illicit movement of weapons. And secondly, the whole issue of contraband as well as illegal foreigners. We therefore wish to see everyone coming through the border controls and all of that. So the border safeguarding as a function has been delivered consistently in the last quarter as it has in the past, but it continues to therefore bring about some achievements. And the other one, I think the cooperation that we wish to achieve, I think cooperation between the SAPS and the SANDF is very key to our success, because that brings about a streamlining of effort and greater impact. And if that is to happen, then we are noting one event here that took place between the Air Force as well as the FAPS Air Wing with regards to airspace missions, because sometimes we are called upon to conduct joint missions with the police in the airspace. And it's very important, therefore, that we streamline our activities with regard to that. And there are work groups established to ensure that such a cooperation and streamlining of efforts is actually done. And I think we are noting that as an achievement. So do we, therefore, talk about maritime security strategy. which is very key beyond South African territory, because the rollout of the strategy is not happening in South Africa, it happens outside of that. It's about ensuring that we push back this piracy in the seas around South Africa and beyond. And to that end, therefore, we continue to have two vessels deployed in the Mozambican channels, which therefore fight against this maritime security, accepting, therefore, Chair, that the big chunk of our trade with other countries, the goods and largely the goods, come through the waters. And if that is the case, we've got to ensure that those particular areas are basically covered. And the strategy, therefore, seeks to highlight that. The issue of cooperation, I think we accept it. Some of the threats that we have may not necessarily be only confined to the seas, but there are some that could have can be in rivers. And to that end, therefore, you shall see that in the exercise Nyami Nyami, which is basically an exercise that we conducted recently in the northern part of Zimbabwe, with other SADC parties. Within that, therefore, we achieved an enhancement of the interoperability of systems 1 and 2, ensuring that the conception of maritime security is achieved between all these parties. I note the member of parliament raising a hand when I'm talking about exercise Nyami Nyami. I think it rings there at all. And the other one, Chair, a point that has been raised by both the members of the college as well as the members of parliament is about the role of the SANDF in regional and continental security. We therefore seek to, we are involved in those initiatives by the continent and the region to ensure that we bring about peace in the region and beyond. And to that end, therefore, the peace support missions conducted basically at this point in time, we are present in Sudan as we speak, and we are present in the DRC, and those are aimed at trying to ensure that we promote peace in those particular peace holes in those particular territories. And I think, Chair, you therefore remember that the FIB, which is the Force Intervention Brigade, in DRC, has achieved enormously in that region. And I think we are proud of that particular brigade, and we are saying therefore that is a contribution towards our regional security that we are making at the SANDF. The other one is about capacity. I think the department, much as you would want to deploy beyond, but you require an internal capacity to actually maintain your own facilities. And we have trained quite a number of people, artisans, in this instance. There's about 646 that we have trained, qualified as artisans, and there are others who are 348 who are outside of the department in other institutions. But we therefore hope that the consolidation, when they do come back to the department, the capacity of the department to maintain its facilities will therefore be achieved, largely because of the artisans that we are training. Chair, therefore, we've got challenges that we have, and I think I'm going to reflect them in passing. One of them is the issue of imbalance, and I think it's a point that has come out in the earlier discussion, an imbalance of budget between human resource allocation, operating budget and capital, equipment, people, and operating budget. There's an imbalance with regard to that. And I think, as you'll see later, that just over 50% of our budget is allocated to human resources. And I think that is not an appreciative ratio that you would want to have. And I think there needs to be some realignment of budget to ensure that it achieves the right percentages of balance. And what we're doing there is try to remedy the situation. One of it, now there has been discussion about the defense review chapters, but we recognize it as an emerging consensus that talks about a particular percentage of defense spending. 2% is being bandied around, and I think we would love to see 2% servicing as a department allocated to defense department, because that would help us to address this particular imbalance. If it's not, therefore, we're going to continue with this particular imbalance. And the second one is talking about exit mechanism. We accept, Chair, that there are some members of the department that needs to be honorably exited. However, you've got to do so through a mechanism that therefore takes into account their realities and what they would become beyond the department. And I think that is currently a matter that the department is faced with, and we therefore hope that very soon it will be realized once it is properly funded by the relevant authorities. The other one, Chair, is about career. Some members, obviously, are reaching a stage in their lives where they are at a plateau. Their personal profiles are inconsistent with their job profiles. Some are getting aged, some are getting old, and all of that. And the requirement, therefore, to deal with that particular situation, because the Defence Force requires rejuvenation, and I've got to say that. And to that end, therefore, this issue of our exit mechanism is very key to us, but the funding is an issue there. Equally, the modeling of careers in the department is a key issue. We've got to be able to articulate a soldier from entry to exit. And that articulation requires a proper pacing as the person goes through. And obviously, the feeder system must be established so that the Defence Force does not only rely on regulars but also on reserves, but obviously they must be properly fed into so that there is a proper balance between the two. The other challenge we have, Chairperson, is in the area of procurement. Defence Department has got a national footprint. We are present across the length and breadth of the country, and if we are like that, we are equally therefore having a decentralized procurement system that is basically very difficult to manage. It is very difficult to manage. And what are we doing about that? What we are doing, therefore, I think we say the answer lies in having a very robust IT system, which we are trying to secure at the present moment, that would bring about standardization of processes across the department. And also control becomes easy because we have got one system ensuring everyone links up to that. The other one, Chairperson, challenge in the area of procurement is about third-party institutions procuring through third parties. That brings about a challenge in three facts, in terms of cost, in terms of time, some other time in terms of quality. If you are to buy through a third party, we want to have a situation where we are basically excluded from some of the transversal contracts. As an example, we have contracts with CETA and other agencies, and sometimes we feel that if we were to have exclusion on some of them, we may therefore have a shortened procurement process, and we can have a better value for money, and even quality may escalate. The issue of compliance with 30 days, we are required by a national directive to ensure that suppliers with the department are paid within 30 days. It is a challenge. If you are running a procurement process that is spread across the country like I indicated earlier, to actually ensure that the invoices from Cape Town and Polokwane and elsewhere are paid in good time without losing the control, that becomes a challenge. But I think interfacing an IT system is a possible solution that we are proposing over there. In the area of asset, Chairperson, I'm trying to pick up the speed. In the area of asset, we are having difficulties of our state of facilities. And I think maybe our installations and other, there's just a challenge about that because maintenance is an issue. What are we doing about that? What we are doing is we are engaged with the National Treasury and Public Works to ensure that we call for a devolution of some of the functions that are currently lying with Public Works to ourselves, because we believe that there are some that we can do, largely around the issue of maintenance, repair and maintenance, that we can do. But we can only do so if we escalate or consolidate and enhance for the works regimen, which is an internal capacity that we have to deal with repair and maintenance. So that is the response that we have to those facilities. And the other one in the asset chair is about management of intellectual property, which we call in our department intangible capital assets. It's a term that the accounting, the auditor general in ourselves agree upon. It's about how do we in the department ensure that we firstly account properly for intellectual property, how to ensure that we exploit it and we derive value out of that. You will know, therefore, that Defense Department runs quite a number of technologically advanced projects, and from which, therefore, arises IP, intellectual property. But the challenge that we have, therefore, has been around accounting for that, and we are going to have a qualification, Chairperson. We can just disclose it ahead of time before the report is tabled before Parliament. But what we are doing about it, because we wish to correct and reverse that situation, we have therefore have a policy in place, and that policy therefore lays out the basis for proper accounting, proper costing, proper structures put in place, and we therefore hope that once this policy is implemented, our management of our IP will be better, and we shall therefore derive the necessary value out of that. In the area of internal audit, one of the challenges that we have is about incapacity. That structure is new, therefore is not fully funded. And however, the structure is very key in ensuring that we promote governance in the department. And the minister has highlighted that particular area, the resourcing that you have is very key. And as such, therefore, the department is moving with speed to realize that minister's priority. And secondly, there are therefore quite a number of critical positions which are currently being implemented or being staffed to ensure that we bring the internal audit division's capacity up to the required standard. But the other point under the internal audit is about the complexity of the defense function. In terms of applying the generic audits and accounting standards, and we are saying so because of two factors. Firstly, there are specialized equipment in Defense Department, and secondly, they are deployed under different set of circumstances. With respect to specialized equipment, you find that Defense Department equipment is specialized. You've got maritime equipment, you've got aviation equipment, you've got all of that. And the way that this equipment amortizes and the way that the equipment depreciates is different from how this computer will do. And if you are to understand that, you will therefore understand that if you therefore apply accounting and auditing on that, you've got to understand that it's not a normal generic application of principle. You've got to have a discussion with that. And secondly, some of our equipment are deployed in South Africa and beyond. We've got equipment in DRC, we've got equipment in Sudan. When it comes to accounting, it's not as easy as accounting for equipment that is located within one geographic position. It therefore depreciates, therefore the accounting becomes an issue. We are in discussion with the AG as well as accounting general to ensure that they understand this particular complexity. And secondly, therefore, if necessary, once we have a common understanding, we therefore hope that the accounting will happen in a manner that speaks to the reality. Financial services, Chair, I'm almost done. Challenge that we have is about compensation of employees. We have said when we came here in the early part of the year that we are short of HR budget. And if that is the case, we've indicated on record that we're going to have a deficit of about 1.1 billion rand with regard to human resources. What we have done, therefore, to try to deal with that situation in here, we have requested Treasury to give us funding for that particular shortfall, firstly. But in the event where that does not realize, as a last resort, we shall therefore look at departmental reprioritization. But if we do exercise this option, we know therefore that we're going to suffer very badly because that would be detrimental to other outputs. Because we're going to take, as Honorable Mwango has said, robbing Peter to pay Paul. And we shall therefore be doing exactly that in that particular instance, because some certain outputs have got to be downscaled if you are to push money into human resources. And the other one where the challenge in finance is about budget pressures across the department. In all programs, we have indicated very clearly that we are underfunded and therefore there are pressures across us, including FLIP, which is the Force Intervention Brigade. There's underfunding with regard to that. And we have asked Treasury to come to the party and assist us in getting the necessary funding. But obviously ensuring that we account for that properly, and secondly, we give value for money, for the money that has been given to ourselves. The other one here, which is very key as a challenge, is about this African capacity for immediate response to crisis. What it is it's a commitment that South Africa has made to the African Union, that we shall therefore assist in ensuring that if there is a crisis that arises in any part of Africa, we shall therefore make available a certain number of forces to ensure that they respond to that particular crisis. But there are two challenges that we therefore have with regard to that. You therefore need to train the defense force with respect to two aspects. You've got to have force preparation, preparing forces for that situation if it does happen. But the second part, therefore, if the situation does arise, you must therefore commit forces. But we are saying, therefore, for the in-year, which is the year under review, we are going to, through reprioritization, ensure that the shortfall for training of our forces for ACAC is done. However, if there is a requirement, therefore, for commitment of forces, therefore, we shall therefore call for additional funding from Treasury. But in the outer year, we realize here that there could be a requirement for an upscaled preparation of forces, and that's why, therefore, we have requested from Treasury an additional budget of 1.5 billion rand to ensure that force preparation does happen. And if that does happen, therefore, we shall be able to deliver on our care. But we are saying, therefore, when it comes to employment of forces, we do not want to have the money in our budget. Treasury must have a contingency fund established, which shall therefore be used in the event of South Africa being called to commit forces. If we are not called to commit forces, the money stays in that particular fund. So that is how we seek to deal, therefore, with that. But ATTAC is very key to peacekeeping in Africa as a contribution that South Africa needs to make. The president had actually is at the forefront, has committed South Africa on this, understanding the role that South Africa must play in peacekeeping missions in the region. Chair, therefore, in terms of budget, as indicated here, we have a budget of 42 billion rand. We have spent 19.4 as of 30th of June, if I were to indicate that. The percentage is different now, and obviously we anticipate that by the end of the year, this budget will be exhausted. But it looks huge, but we know that it shall be spent because there are lined up outputs throughout the year. And these are the allocation programs, and I think these are self-explanatory. I won't spend time on it. This is, again, the spread of the budget according to economic classification, and again, that is self-explanatory. And that brings us to the end of the presentation in the constraint of time, Chairperson. Thank you.
What assistance do you want the committee to lend to you after your presentation?
Chair, I will therefore defer the question to the leader of the delegation. Thank you.
Leader of delegation. Thank you very much. Before you go on, leader of the delegation, honorable members, I think this was just a brief, and you'll give advice, you'll give instructions. It's not like we are dealing with a quarterly report, which always becomes very heated because we want to know as to whether you implemented what you told us you are going to implement. And the students are going to leave us here now, and we thank you very much. If you can quietly shall go before honorable members, which can just have a break of 3 minutes before honorable members ask questions.